previously on We Live Here.
Even when the sidewalks are open, I think the balls and the pots and the gates in the middle of the street suggest you really shouldn't be on that street unless you have some business there. You know, there's an intimidation factor to all of this, which is one of the mechanical sort of consistencies across all of these.
Hey, it's me, Tim.
And me, Camille.
And today's show is all about the G word.
Gentrification.
Which we often think of as happening in urban centers.
But the truth is, for generations, there's been a slow turnover as cities expand into the suburbs and rural areas, which is what happened at Brentwood Promenade, a relatively affluent shopping center about 15 minutes outside the city of St. Louis.
We sent producer Andrew Warshauer out there on a busy Sunday afternoon to ask shoppers if they knew what was there before the Target and Trader Joe's.
No, I don't.
I don't.
No, not off the top of my head.
One shopper, Joan, knew a little bit more.
There used to be houses here when I first moved to St. Louis.
And she's right. This used to be a neighborhood called Evans Howard. For 90 years, it was home to middle-class African-American families centered around the Evans Howard Fire Brick Company.
We were like one big family. You know, something happened, we were all in it together.
Olivette Thompson grew up in Evans Howard. She shared memories of her old neighborhood on St. Louis on the Air, St. Louis Public Radio's daily talk show.
I've cried many a tears along with most of my other neighbors at some point of breaking up the neighborhood.
All that's left now is a plaque near a liquor store in the back of the plaza.
It reads, Commemorating Evans Howard Place, 1907 to 1997 by the city of Brentwood.
But you had to fight to get the rock now. I don't think you get the rock easily.
Dr. John Wright has been documenting the stories and places of St. Louis's African-American communities for decades. He says that small rock is a victory in a country that often wants to forget its own history.
You know, if you don't know where you've been, it's hard to predict where you're going to end up. And you need to know your past in order to kind of work with the future for the future. And the more we know, black and white know about the history of an area, a community, the better prepared to deal with the day.
The story of Evans Howard Place has been acted out countless times in St. Louis and across the rest of the country. If you're from around the region, you might know about the Mill Creek Valley, a huge section of downtown that held roughly 20,000 mostly black residents after World War II, but was demolished in the 1950s.
Or Laclede Town, a housing development that gave rise to famous artists and was a beacon of integration in a divided city. But it too was demolished in the 80s. And the land that it sat on is now mostly controlled by St. Louis University.
And then there's Meacham Park, a thriving middle-class black community that was controversially absorbed into the suburb of Kirkwood in the early 90s. And this list, it just goes on and on.
What happened to those communities? You know, they're fastly disappearing. And many of them, like Robertson, Missouri, is under the runway now of the airport. Gone. Don't even talk about it, it's gone. You know, downtown St. Louis, there was a plaque where a colored woman by the name of Esther had the first land grant from Spain. The plaque's gone. I mean, the plaque has disappeared.
Today's episode is about a historic black community that's fighting right now to avoid the same fate, to hang on to their land, their history, and their future.
And even if you're from the St. Louis area, you may not have heard of it. Its name is Westland Acres, and we're going to tell you its story.
From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here, a show for people somewhere on the woke spectrum.
Westland Acres is a small neighborhood located about a 40-minute drive west from downtown St. Louis. It never incorporated and is split between two of the wealthiest suburbs in the region, Chesterfield and Wildwood.
Remember those names. They'll come up a little later.
The story of Westland Acres goes way back to the time when Daniel Boone settled Missouri in the late 18th century. And yet, it's still not well known.
Dr. Wright first heard about Westland Acres himself when he led recreation trips in the 60s.
And I used to take the kids I had out to Ellisville for skating. And some of the kids from Westland used to skate there. And all I knew, the whites referred, there's a place they call Little Africa on the hill.
Westland Acres is named for William West, the patriarch of a black family that's lived on the land for more than 200 years. Located on a hill, the neighborhood is quiet and pretty forested.
Church Road, the only way in and out of the neighborhood, is a little under a mile long. There's no grand entrance, no sidewalks, and the houses look different from the freshly constructed McMansions in nearby subdivisions.
And while the ranch and split-level homes built in the 50s and 60s have seen better days, they're cared for and well-maintained by longtime residents.
My name is Doris Fidmont Frazier. I married a man from this area in 1950. I've been here ever since.
At 87 years old, she's still living in the house that she and her late husband Cliff Frazier built. Cliff was the great-grandson of William West.
William West was brought here by his slave owner, Lawrence Long.
Records for this time, and especially records of those kept in slavery, are almost non-existent. But we do know that Lawrence Long came to Missouri from Kentucky in 1797, while the area was still under Spanish control, and that one of Long's family's slaves was William West.
Who William West's mother or father, if they were along with him. Or, all we know is that he married a lady by the name of Matilda Webster. We've been searching and searching, but we have not found out. So we just go back to William West and Lawrence Long.
In 1881, 16 years after the state of Missouri voted to abolish slavery, William West spent $665.15 to buy 133 acres of property that belonged to his former owners.
That's double what white landowners had paid for the exact same land just weeks before. Doris says, despite the inflated cost, William West saw this land as the start of his family's legacy.
And I just think it was so incredible that he was thinking this way. No education, couldn't read, probably couldn't write, but had that intuition that he could do great things. So.
At the heart of the community West built is Union Baptist Church, which is still where a lot of collective history is kept. It was formed officially in 1921.
But actually it started before then because they were meeting in homes and having prayer meetings in the brush harbors and what have you.
Union Baptist Church can trace its roots back to 1841 when white settlers founded Antioch Baptist Church a mile away.
They treated the slaves like slaves, you know, let them come to church, but they couldn't participate.
Even after emancipation, voting rights at Antioch were limited to the freeborn members, and slaves weren't allowed to worship with whites. In time, the former slaves and their families set up churches of their own. And by the 1950s, Westland Acres had a significant population.
Oh, gosh. We had, I counted up the other day, I know I said 40, at least 40 families.
Over 100 community members, at almost probably like 200.
That's Doris's daughter, Christy Murdoch, who grew up in Westland Acres.
You know, we had butchers in the community. We had a little store. We, of course, we had our church.
Since 1950, when I came out here, it has been my goal for betterment. I like progress. That's why I've been fighting so. I fought with the school board. I fought with the cities.
And her work has led to two big victories. The first was education. There used to be a small two-room schoolhouse that didn't desegregate until 1963, 9 years after Brown versus the Board of Education.
I said, not one of you sitting in this room on this board would send your kids to a one-room school day in this day and age.
The second victory was the paving of Church Road. For many years, the community was relatively isolated. Church Road was and is the only way in and out of the community. and up until 1967, it was a dirt road. But Doris worked with the county to get it paved.
All the way from the bottom of the hill all the way up. We had a big celebration when we dedicated the road. Oh yeah, big deal, big deal.
The county supervisor at the time described paving Church Road as a path to a better tomorrow. And as Christy remembers it, around that same time, things began to change.
It's quite impressive. When I grew up in this area, this was all pretty much farmland and very sparsely populated. You know, people lived out here, but you would have to drive a good while to get to the next community or neighbor.
Subdivisions popped up on what used to be farm fields. Then came municipal governments.
In 1988, the city of Chesterfield incorporated and annexed the northern half of Westland Acres. 8 years later, a newly formed city called Wildwood annexed the southern half.
Now, we have people all around us, especially our Westland Acres community. We have, you know, upwards of 800 to million and multi-million dollar homes that really have surrounded us.
And while the area around them has grown, the population of Westland Acres has shrunk.
There's about 22 to 25 residents that live currently in the community. And that's within like nine homes. There's nothing that has transpired on this hill in the last 50, 60 years outside of a paved road. We do have cable now, and we do have, what else? Oh, trash service, you know? But yet we're paying, my mother's paying, and all the other members are paying like we're getting all the other amenities that everybody else is getting, you know? And we're not.
There's no gas service, no sewer service. And even with all the new developments around them, residents of Westland Acres still have to get their water from a well.
Since all of this development, I'm telling you, the water just ain't as good as it used to be.
Westland Acres receives police, planning, and trash services from local governments. But officials say the cost of connecting other basic utilities falls to the homeowners, which is not a huge deal if you're a developer building a brand new subdivision loaded with really expensive homes.
But it's a cost that's out of reach for current Westland Acres residents.
I mean, seriously, all around us, we have water, we have everything that we want, but somehow we've been skipped over. And every time we reached out and we would get so far, we would be shut down. And I will say that one of the greatest accomplishments of this community is the fact that you were able to drive up here on a paved road.
Most of Westland Acres' neighbors aren't even aware of the community or what life is like at the top of the hill. We stopped by the Arbors at Kerr's Mill, a development that sits at the base of Church Road.
The homes in the subdivision feature large backyards, 3-car garages, 4 bedrooms, and 3.5 bathrooms. Brad Cross just moved into the neighborhood.
Is that what it is back there called Westland Acres? In fact, my real estate agent was like, have you ever heard of Church Road? And I said, nah, tell me about that.
The lowest listed price for a house in Brad's neighborhood is $600,000.
Though she grew up in Westland Acres and still goes to church at Union Baptist, Christy lives in Kirkwood, just a few cities over.
And it would be a struggle for me to live in this area. To have the type of home and residential equivalency, there would be no way.
Meanwhile, all the high-end development has caused property taxes and Westland Acres to skyrocket.
I'm turning 87. My property taxes went from like $2,000 when we first moved out. They're over $10,000 now for the property that we have.
One of the things that our family members struggle with each and every year is how do we pay for these property taxes? My mother always has a statement. She says, I'm land rich and money poor.
Residents don't want to be the next Evans Howard or Mill Creek Valley. Others share their worry. The Missouri Alliance for Historic Preservation has put Westland Acres on its list of endangered properties for the past 2 years in a row.
Bill Hart is the organization's director. He says the only way to save a community like Westland Acres is tax abatement. In this case, freezing tax rates at pre-development levels.
We do it for rich developers. We do it far less, obviously, for people who are struggling to make ends meet.
St. Louis County Assessor Jake Zimmerman says Missouri used to have just such a program.
It wasn't much, but it was enough to keep people in their homes. And unfortunately, the folks who run the legislature, even as they claimed they were trying to reduce the tax burden on Missouri's citizens, they got rid of these safety nets.
Meanwhile, the tax bills for Westland Acres keep getting bigger.
What's that thing on TV you can ask for money and...
The GoFundMe?
The GoFund.
Yeah.
Well, it was done without really talking to me about it, but one of the younger heirs did it. And you'd be surprised some of the responses. You need to get a job. Sell the land. You don't need that land. You know, you don't need... It was just awful, awful what people think of you.
The descendants of William West keep reaching out for new ways to hold on to the legacy he planted more than 200 years ago.
And their plan may surprise you. It comes with a bit of a twist. Because Westland Acres' fight to save the community doesn't hinge on keeping developers out.
It actually hinges on bringing in a development plan of their own.
We've been here for over 200 years. And look at us, and look at them.
Doris Frazier and her family have had a long-standing vision to preserve the legacy of William West.
We wanted a community where all levels of incomes could live together and all races of people could live together. That was our dream.
Doris is talking about more housing, and not just McMansions, but homes built for every income level.
Something that would not only make the expensive area more inclusive, but Christy says it would also solve a lot of the neighborhood's problems.
They would have to bring in the sewers. They would have to bring in, you know, water. They would have to bring all the amenities to provide for a community of 100 to 200 homes.
Younger families could move back to the area. Taxes would be spread across a larger population, and the community's history would be preserved. In the mid-90s, the community came close to realizing this vision.
The city of Chesterfield and St. Louis County completed a study on the neighborhood, and according to officials, up to 200 affordable homes could be built on one-acre, half-acre, and quarter-acre lots.
The mix of single-family houses, townhomes, and apartments was exactly what the Westland Acres residents wanted. Their wealthy neighbors, on the other hand.
They were like, affordable? No, if you build affordable homes, that means that my property value is going to come down. We can't allow that.
And the neighbors had the power to stop the plan. Here's how.
Remember, Westland Acres is split between two municipalities, Chesterfield, which approved the plan, and Wildwood. Westland Acres wanted to move their entire community into Chesterfield, so they could move forward with the mixed income development.
Two neighboring subdivisions were on board with merging with Chesterfield, but once the housing plan for Westland Acres came out, support for the move evaporated.
Oh, we met with the city of Wildwood a lot, trying to get them to put us back into just the one city of Chesterfield. So we had many hearings and many meetings, but they wouldn't agree to it.
While Chesterfield allowed for homes to be built on smaller lots, at the time, Wildwood required a minimum of a 3-acre lot.
So essentially, houses would have to be built farther apart, which usually translates to fewer houses, bigger houses, and more expensive houses.
And though they came close, Westland Acres couldn't get enough of their neighbors to support their bid to become part of Chesterfield exclusively, which is why the community still remains divided between the two cities today.
Yeah, you know, what I think is so amazing about that is that if you drive up on this hill today, you'll see many of the homes that were standing back then, and they're not the greatest homes. So any home that was going to be built in the 90s and anytime thereafter would be a great improvement over what is currently standing now. And the word was that it was going to be affordable housing. And to me, it's just code word for, you know, Section 8, you know, ghetto housing and things like that. But we knew, and even today we know, that that's not going to fly. it mesmerizes me that they would prefer us living like this rather than building something that could potentially even take their value, their land value, higher. Because this is not bringing it up. It's not. So I'm wondering, what are they waiting for?
There was another glimmer of hope in 2005. That year, the community worked with the city of Wildwood to place Westland Acres on its historic registry.
According to Joe Vunich, the director of planning and parks for the city of Wildwood, the designation came with some benefits for any future development.
Instead of a 3-acre density of Westland Acres, they could have a 1-acre density.
And the new zoning laws would cut through a lot of red tape and help open the door for an affordable housing development.
On top of that, street names, artwork, a log cabin, and a walking trail would all speak to the area's heritage. And oral history would be recorded and distributed to local schools and libraries.
And a $100,000 donation would be made in Westland Acres' name to fund affordable housing in West St. Louis County. Anyone who lived in the neighborhood would know its roots.
They will still know that this is Westland Acres and this came from an enslaved person at one time. And the family had enough forethought to perpetuate not only the economic magnificence of it, but the historical significance of it.
And the family had a developer lined up.
In 2008, we had everything laid out. I mean, it was perfect planning. The people were going to keep their homes. They were going to build homes for the people here, pay for the land. We were going to have a flourishing community. And of course, the bottom dropped out. And we've not been able to get up there since.
Seeing their dream continuously close at hand and yet never fully realized has taken its toll.
We have allies in the city of Chesterfield, allies in the city of Wildwood, but not enough to really make a difference and really come put the power, and I'm talking about brain power, financial power, political power, to bear, bring it to bear so that this little African-American community can realize the dream that my forefather had when he purchased it from his slave master. That's it. And the thing that gets me is that we were here before a lot of these folks. A lot of the folks that sit in the city councils, that sit on boards, that even built these new homes, we've been here for over 200 years. And look at us, and look at them. How come we can't achieve at least some of what they have? And we've never been able to do it, and I don't know why. And we've had people say, people of prominence tell us, who do this type of thing, development, you know, improvement of communities around the world. We've heard people say they have never encountered such difficulty as they have in this community. And I don't know why, except for maybe the fact that we're black and brown. My goal, and I will tell everybody, my goal is to see something happen before my mother closes her eyes. She just turned 87. And I would hate to see her close her eyes and see all of those years of hard work, labor, and love for this community not be seen. You know, she always has a saying that, you know, I want to smell my flowers while I'm still alive. Well, darn it, I want to see her to see this development while she's still alive. That would be her flowers. And we're not begging. Sometimes it just takes a little something else that we don't have.
In the past year, Westland Acres residents have again begun working with realtors and developers. But after so many false starts, they're wary of sharing too many details at such an early stage.
If there's one thing that we've learned in this entire process is that you have to know whom you can trust. Because we know that after all of these years, there's a reason why we have not been able to move forward with the development plan as we had hoped. So we have learned to hold our tongues, especially until we know something concrete is going to happen. And this is the same case because we don't know how it might impact the future plans. So we're very hopeful, we're very optimistic, and we are open to any ideas, but we just don't have any real concrete information to share at this time.
We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Alana Sistrunk is our associate producer.
And Robert Peterson is our boss.
He's the program director here at St. Louis Public Radio.
And before we go, we should say a very special shout out to
Andrew.
He is the producer you heard at the top of this show. He's the one who went out to Brentwood, and he's actually the guy who pitched us this story in the first place.
Absolutely. Great job, Andrew. Bravo. And from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX,
this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.